Welcome back to Through the Word. Today we'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'm your host, Peyton Jones. Let's jump right in. Well, last chapter, we did a little bit of a review of what a covenant is, and particularly saw the Ten Commandments as a covenant. After all, it begins with the usual opening, the preamble, which defines the relationship of the two parties involved in the contract. The preamble always states who the players are and what their relationship is to each other. In this case, God starts off with, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. He is their Savior. They are his servants." Now, this was typical in a king who conquered any nation or any peoples. He would come in and say, "I am the mighty King Hammurabi, who dashes his enemies, yea, who grinds them into fine dust." But here God is saying, "I'm not the God who conquered you. I'm the God who saved you." It just seems like this would be an easier God to follow than the pagan gods that they knew. Well, have you ever felt like someone had to tell you something over and over? When I was young, my mom used to tell me to take the trash out every week. Now, it was no mystery when the trash truck was coming. It came on the same day every week, but my mom still had to tell me every week because I was a teenager and I would forget. Now, she got mad when I forgot, and rightly so, but I got mad when she reminded me. It felt like nagging. But I'll never forget something she said to me one day. She said, "You know, you resent me telling you this, but one day you'll be married to a woman. And when you are, she's going to tell you the exact same things that I'm telling you now." Well, that got my attention. I'm married now, and my wife has to tell me the same things on a weekly basis. Now, luckily, I take the trash out without any reminding as a grown man. But there are some things that she does have to remind me on. And some things she just thinks she does. But there's some times where I've missed things and forgotten. My wife says, "See, you don't like it when I tell you, but deep down, you know sometimes I still got to tell you." So Moses had just given the Ten Commandments, but now he's going to give them the exhortation and sound like a broken record on repeat, saying over and over, "Be faithful to God, obey." Now, as he uses the Ten Commandments as a template, we're going to jump off now into the first of those commandments. And Moses is going to spend the bulk of this chapter and the next couple on the first commandment, "You shall have no other gods before me." This chapter really is about heart religion. You see, it's not just enough to tell us to have no other gods before Yahweh. We're thick. We're dumb. We need it unpacked a bit. We need to know why. So Moses does some open heart surgery and tells us about the anatomy of our hearts. A doctor studies the heart because unless he understands what's wrong with the heart muscle, he can't fix it when something goes wrong. The first thing Moses holds up for us to consider in our heart anatomy is the fear of the Lord. In verse 1 and 2, he says, "These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you're crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and your children after them may fear the Lord your God, as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands I give you, so that you may enjoy long life." You see, Moses talks about the fact that you need to fear him a little bit. Now, we don't like the word fear because it usually conjures up images of scary things, like rabid dogs or dolls with knives or underwater machinery. I think I just vomited all of my phobias onto you. I left out flesh-eating mutants and trichophobia. Please don't Google that. But the fear here speaks more of a reverence, trust, respect, and yes, even fear. Fear of going against him. Why would we be afraid of that? Because of what verse 3 says. To obey him so that it goes well with you. When we disobey God, things don't go well with us. And we know this, and yet we still need reminding. We reap what we sow, and life falls apart because we don't listen. So in conclusion, the first thing that makes our hearts sick is a lack of proper understanding or respect for God. And Moses uses the term fear here. But in section 2, in verses 4 through 12, Moses gives the second reason that our spiritual tickers go sideways. We forget him, or we don't remember. Now, this theme will be stretched out through the next few chapters. The section in verses 4 through 12 has a remembering, forgetting theme. These commands, verse 6, are to be written on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Give them a spiritual noogie until the truth goes in by osmosis. Talk about them. Tie them as symbols. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the doorposts of your house. Notice all the verbs here. When you're sitting, walking, entering, exiting. These laws are to be in your sight, hearing, conversation, and minds. Don't forget, there will be a test or a testing. So God says, talk about them at home. Walk on the road. You'll obey my law with a fox. You'll obey it in a box. You'll obey it with green eggs and ham. You will obey my laws. Sam, I am. And then in verse 12, he summarizes this section by saying, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you up out of slavery. There's that pointing back to the nature of their relationship that we kicked off with at the beginning of this. That's why this section begins with the most important prayer in the Hebrew faith, the Shema, found in verse 4. The Shema reads, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. It was a strong statement that there was only one God, and why it's called the Shema is because this part of this chapter, this verse, was extrapolated out of it and made a daily prayer that the Israelites would recite multiple times a day. They would face towards Jerusalem, cover their heads, and remind themselves that God was one God. Ironically, it's followed by the greatest commandment. And Jesus, when questioned what the greatest commandment is, quotes verse 5, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your strength. Putting those two verses together is Moses' way of saying, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. There's only one God. Therefore, love him with all of your heart. Don't love God with a piece of your heart or divide between two separate gods or idols in your life. Give God your all because he's one. He deserves all of your heart. God puts that right after the verse that Jews were made to recite every single day, and yet still they miss this as the greatest command. This was meant to be the heart of religion, heart religion, if you will, heart religion itself. It was meant to be written on their hearts, not on tablets of stone, as the previous chapter points out. But they took it literally. They made phylacteries or boxes with scriptures inside of them. And Jesus rightfully mocked it as a ridiculous and gross misinterpretation of what God was saying. God was saying, I want this to get inside of you. And if you have to write it outside of you everywhere you go to get it inside of you, then do that. You see, the head governs your thinking and the hands govern what you do. Which is why God pointed out, bind them on those two places. The law was meant to govern both your thoughts and your actions. At the end of the chapter, Moses repeats the advice to fear him because God is jealous, and he will get angry if you test him. Moses brings up the incident at Massa. You remember that, don't you? Massa. No, you don't. But they did. And Moses says, you don't want to test them like your fathers did there, do you? Do you? I know what you're thinking at this point. Okay, Peyton, what really happened at Massa? Well, I'm glad you asked. Massa means testing. And the Israelites accused God of not being able to provide for them. They tested God there, making accusations that he wasn't a provider, but God had tricked them out in the desert to kill them. It was the opposite of faith. And they told Moses they wished they hadn't followed this God. Moses sees this crisis in Israel's future, where their lack of faith of God will lead them to abandon him again. And so in verses 13 through 19, Moses warns them about the future. He promises God will thrust out their enemies before them instead of thrusting them out. Lastly, Moses wants to make sure that God isn't just asking for blind obedience. So he tells them in verse 20 how to explain to their children why we obey. You see, God just doesn't want obedience. He wants us to understand that it comes from our love for him. We were slaves, God bought us, and now we're his free servants. Verse 25 gives the final reason if we are careful to obey this law before the Lord our God as he commanded us, that will be our righteousness. But of course, nobody can keep the law perfectly. This reminds us that though righteousness was required of us, we couldn't provide it. Someone else had to provide the perfect obedience on our behalf that led us to being declared righteous. No other God could or would provide his son to do that for us. So in this chapter about worshiping other gods, we end with the reason that God and God alone is worthy of our worship. Read Deuteronomy chapter 6 today, and as you do, worship him.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.